If you will, please turn in your Bibles to Luke, the 18th chapter. Most of our emphasis this afternoon and this evening will be in that chapter. I heard it said once that a good speaker knows how to stop talking before his audience stops listening. And for those of you who are in group two and have already had a meeting and now have listened well to Brother Larry, I realize that there's not much time left. So I'm going to try to be quick. And we're going to look at a passage that I think is very familiar to all of us, and I'm not even going to say that we're going to look at it in a way that's new and unusual to us all. It's the same message that we've always gotten in looking at this passage, but we're going to do that because I think that the passage we're going to look at has a message that is important enough, at least to me, and is one that I forget so often that I need to repeat it to myself as often as I can. So tonight we're going to look at the story of the Pharisee and the publican. So if you're in Luke chapter 18, beginning in verse 9, it reads, this is Jesus speaking parables to the multitudes that are in front of him. He said, he also told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and treated others with contempt. Two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee, standing by himself, prayed thus, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I get. But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even lift up his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you that this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted. For a few minutes, I'd like to look at this for just a little bit, and the outline for tonight is just going to be very quickly. We're going to take a look at the subjects involved in this parable, the reaction that Jesus gives to each of those, and then finally the application that we can all make for our own lives. So first, let's look at the Pharisee. The Pharisees were a group that would have been considered to be righteous. Many people looked to them as being very righteous people, being very upright. And by all accounts, outwardly, they were righteous. And so to have anything said against them or against their spirituality would have been shocking. And in Matthew chapter 5, in verse 20, Jesus is speaking again and he says, for I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Can you imagine what it would have been like to hear that? To be someone who's not very religious one way or the other, perhaps, and to be somebody who looks up to the scribes and the Pharisees, the people who are supposed to be the experts in the law and who, by all accounts, look like they are very religious and righteous, and yet here Jesus says that you have to exceed them in your righteousness. What a goal to have to have. How can I be more spiritual than they are? And despite that, or in addition to that, the Pharisees often didn't just do what was required of them, but they often went beyond what was asked of them. They weren't just spiritual to the extent that the law prescribed, but they actually would do more. They would go farther than was asked of them. In Mark chapter 7, it's talking about the Pharisees and they are accusing Jesus' disciples of not washing their hands before they eat. And in verse 3 it says, for the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they wash their hands, holding to the tradition of the elders. And when they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash. And there are many other traditions that they observe, such as the washing of cups and pots and copper vessels and dining couches. And the Pharisees and the scribes asked him, why do your disciples not walk according to the tradition of the elders, but eat with defiled hands? And he said to them, well, did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites? As it is written, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. You leave the commandment of God and hold to the tradition of men. So here we see that the Pharisees often went beyond the letter of the law. They often imposed restrictions and traditions that were not authorized by God, thinking that if I'm supposed to go this far, well, surely I'm righteous by going this far. Surely I'll be even more righteous. And he thought they would think that they were going to be justified by their actions. And if we turn back over to Luke, you see that the Pharisee in this passage tries to do that. What does he say? He says, I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I get. They thought that by doing these things, by being so pious and so outwardly religious, that they were somehow going to be deserving of the salvation that God had for them. And not only did they do those things, but they also stayed away from doing the things that they weren't supposed to do. I'm not an extortioner. I'm not unjust. I'm not an adulterer. I'm not even like this tax collector. And in that passage, you can almost see him pointing his arm in front of everybody at the tax collector to say, I am so much better than this guy. I'm not like that. And so outwardly, to any of us who might have known this Pharisee, if he had been a real person, if we had seen him, to us, we probably would have thought that he was a righteous person, outwardly righteous. We would have no way of knowing that inside he wasn't what he was supposed to be. Let's look second at the other subject of the passage, the publican, or a tax collector. The tax collectors were generally greedy. It was their job to collect the taxes from their fellow citizens. And when doing this, they would often take more than they were supposed to take and put that in their own pockets. So they were known to be thieves, to be greedy, full of avarice. And beyond that, they were considered traitors to the countrymen. The Jews knew that they were the chosen people of God. And the fact that they were no longer in charge of their own destinies, and the fact that the Romans were controlling them was just a reminder to them of the fact that they had sinned and fallen out of grace with God. And so they looked poorly on any of the Gentiles, especially the Romans. And a tax collector was someone who had agreed to go to work for the Romans. It was usually a Jew who had agreed to work for them. And not only that, but was now taking money, was actually hurting his other fellow Jews in the process. So they were considered traitorous people, just horrible. Not only greedy and full of avarice and stealing from their countrymen, but also just traitorous in everything that they did. And I think I've already said this, but they were known to be sinful. And in many of those passages in the Synoptic Gospels, the Matthew, Mark, and Luke, there are examples of Jesus using the tax collectors as a synonym for those who were evil, who were sinful. If you turn over with me to Matthew chapter 5 again, this time in verse 46, and Jesus says, if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing? I'm sorry, let me back up. Verse 46 instead. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than the others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? So you see here he's using this parallel language, and he's using tax collectors interchangeably with Gentiles, Gentiles who were known to be sinful. And so to our outward appearance, to look at this person, if we had seen him, for instance, we would have probably said that this person was definitely sinful. There's no way that this person could have been considered to have been righteous. So I think if we had been alive at that time, that would have been our reaction. But look at Jesus' reaction. And imagine if you had been in that situation, knowing what you know about Pharisees and scribes, and knowing what you know about tax collectors, how his reaction would have sounded to you. First of all, of what sin in particular was the Pharisee guilty? If you had to put him on trial and gather evidence against him, what would you have said he had done wrong? It might not be that you could find anything. And back in Luke, You look at what he says, he's actually giving thanks here to God in his prayer. But if you notice his tone of voice and the things that he says, it's, I thank you that I am not like other men. Is he really thankful here, or is he talking about himself? Thank you for making me so great. Thank you for everything that you've given to me to make me so much more wonderful than anyone who is a sinner. And so, obviously, he's guilty of pride here. But he's also forgetting his other sins, the other sins that he's committed. He's saying that he is not like any of those adulterers, any of those unlawful men. And so he's basically saying that he's not as bad as the publican, certainly. Even if he has sinned and has done those things in the past, he's pointing out the tax collector and saying, I'm not as bad as he is, certainly. But in so many passages, the Pharisees are considered to be hypocrites, and Jesus rails against them. And in so many places, and actually in Matthew chapter 23, he pronounces 7 woes upon the Pharisees, saying there are all of these reasons that you guys are hypocrites. And imagine what that would have been like. They thought themselves to be lawful. They thought that they were doing everything by the letter. And then to hear that they were actually being hypocritical in everything they do, imagine how that would have gone over. But even if you looked at that and you saw how bad the Pharisees were acting, why was Jesus' reaction so passionate to them? Because certainly the tax collector's sins were more egregious. They were more severe than the things that the tax collectors had done, or that the Pharisees had done. And so why was Jesus' reaction so passionate? Was it because of the severity of what they had done? I think it's more because of their attitude, the attitude that they had. And if you think of it in a certain way, isn't that actually a more severe sin? Isn't that sin really more severe? They were merely professing to be righteous, and there was nothing behind it. Yes, they did everything according to the letter. They fasted, they tithed, they did everything that was required of them. They looked good on the outside. But Jesus says that this is not acceptable. Because they were so used to studying the Word. They were the ones that were the teachers. But because of their understanding of the Word, and because of how close they were to it, that just made their sin that much more hated by Jesus. So after hearing that, and all of those bad things pronounced upon the Pharisee, imagine his reaction, your reaction when you were thinking of the publican. He was guilty, certainly, of much more severe sins by our standards. And wouldn't his sins make him more difficult to be forgiven? Wouldn't it be much more difficult for Jesus to say that he's forgiven? Why does Jesus then say he's justified? Well, look at his spirit in verse 13. He would not even lift his eyes to heaven, but he beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. He's so humble. He knows that he has nothing to offer, that he has no way of justifying himself, and that all he can do is call upon the mercy of God. He didn't think that he was already justified somehow by any of the actions that he had done. He was truly sorrowful for the things that he had done wrong. So despite the magnitude of his sins, no matter what it was that he had done, because he was coming to God in the right manner, Jesus was able to overlook the things that he had done wrong and declare him forgiven. So what is our application out of all of this? Well, first of all, I think we need to notice that our kind of sin, whatever it is that we're guilty of, is not at all what is important to God. It doesn't matter whether we are murderers or adulterers or liars or what. In his eyes, everything is the same. If you'll flip to Romans chapter 3 with me, please, and look in verse 22. It says that the righteousness of God through faith in Jesus Christ is for all who believe. For there is no distinction. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God and are justified by his grace as a gift through the redemption that is in Jesus Christ, whom God put forward as a propitiation by his blood to be received by faith. And so we see there that then in God's sight, it doesn't matter what we've done, but all sin is equally condemning to us. And in 1 John chapter 1 and verse 9, it says, if we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us of our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. Second thing that we need to get from this is that God's reaction to the sinful is not based on what they've done, but it's based on their heart. And think about this in that time. That would have been a revolutionary teaching. Because the Old Testament doesn't place as much emphasis on how your heart is. It places emphasis on what you do. What sacrifices do you make? And as to us as humans, we tend to classify things, don't we? We say, I'm not as bad as so-and-so. Or at least I don't do this. I know I have the things that I struggle with, but at least it's not as bad as such-and-such. And that's our human nature, I think. But isn't his teaching still even revolutionary? Even though it happened so many thousands of years ago, isn't it still hard for us to get our minds around the fact that no matter what our sin is, no matter how bad it was, whether we were murderers or liars or adulterers, that we are just as guilty in our sin as anyone else? But really, in God's eyes, there is no difference. And the final thing we need to realize is that it's not for us to judge at all who's heart is right. And once we see ourselves as being just as sinful and just as wrong and just as condemned as all of those out there, won't it be easier for us to then go and teach those people that we need to teach? How many times do you say, oh, I won't even bother to spend time teaching the gospel to such and such a person because they probably wouldn't be receptive anyway. I know what kind of life they lead. I know what they go and do on the weekends, and it's just not spiritual. How do we know that those people aren't the righteous ones? How do we know that the ones that appear to be righteous aren't? How do we know that those around us here who come to church and who do everything that they're supposed to do, teach classes, preach, the elders, the deacons, the whoever is in front of us as being the righteous ones in our examples, how do we know that inside they aren't struggling and that they don't need help as well? And if we don't realize that they are just as susceptible to temptation and to things going wrong as we are, then we can't help them. So finally tonight, I would just like to ask you a question, and that is, which are you? Are you the hypocrite, coming to church religiously, always showing up, doing everything that you're supposed to do, looking outwardly like you are living the life that you are supposed to be, but inside you're doing it for the wrong motives? You're doing it because everyone in your family has always done it, and if you did something differently, it would be terrible. People would not accept you anymore. Or are you doing it because you like the accolades that people give you when you get up in front of them and do something that looks righteous? Is that your motive? Or are you a humble sinner, knowing that we are all sinners on our way, on our journey to heaven, and we're all trying to help each other get there, no matter what is in our past? If any of you have a need this evening, if any of you are struggling with anything that we can help you with, everything is prepared if you'll come forward now while we stand and sing.